Hello, 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 and welcome to CKCU 93.1 FM. This is the Velvet Studio, Ottawa's queer media, and we're coming at you from the capital. Now, of course, Ottawa has been a buzz, as has been most of the rest of the country, over the upcoming election. We are a campus station here, and there is a line almost out the door for the voting booth. So, of course, if you can get out and vote, there are plenty of locations available at the moment where that is a possibility. So, yes, have your voice heard and, you know, really make an impact on this year's election. It should be a great, great time. Today's show, we will be joined a little later on by the co-host, Sebastian Plant. However, we will be discussing the election insofar as it relates to the LGBT plus community. So that's lesbian, gay, bi, trans. And then there's been a lot of issues that have come up that do relate to this community. And most notably, some folks may be aware of the candidates who have recently had to step down. Of course, the Conservatives will now be having a ghost candidate as a result of one that was recently forced out of the Conservative Party. And likewise, the NDP similarly also had a candidate who was facing criticisms for possible homophobia. So there's definitely a lot of content. We're looking at a record-breaking possible 21 MP candidates running in this year's election, which would dwarf last year's elected MP count for the openly GLBT community. And we'll be getting into whether or not that's important or relevant, or why that is important and relevant, in just a few minutes. We'll also be looking at how this election has really highlighted a much broader debate around identity documents. In particular, Elections Canada, in Edmonton in particular, released their voter ID cards to some trans folks with the wrong name. In particular, it highlighted their birth name, which of course caused considerable concern. So we are going to be looking at all of those issues as they come up. But before we get into that, we'll be playing some Canadian content today for sure. And we're starting off with Diamond Rings, who is a fantastic artist based out of Toronto. With the first of the two tracks we're playing for him today is called Everything Speaks. We'll be back in just a few minutes on the Velvet Studio.
my vision. I know when to show my pride. I know when to keep it hidden. Everything speaks far and wide. 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 Everything speaks.
Hello and welcome back to Sick ACU 93.1 FM. And we'll be discussing today LGBT issues as they relate to the election, which is very exciting as a topic, and we are certainly looking forward to covering that. You know, let's start off, first of all, with Elections Canada itself. Now, of course, if you have any questions or you want to join in the conversation, as I mentioned earlier, my co-host for today, Sebastian Plante, will be in a little later in the show, and we will be continuing our conversation in more detail there. But in the meantime, if you'd like to join in, we are obviously taking tweets at Velvet Studio One, or you can contact us here directly at the station. We are just essentially analysing in a public affairs kind of way news stories relating to the LGBT community and the election. We're not particularly propagating any side. That's not the responsibility of this show. However, let's look first and foremost at Elections Canada itself, who appears to have been accidentally outing trans people. Angie Reid of the Trans Equality Society of Alberta was particularly shocked, and this is where it came to the really the fore of people's attention when they were received, when she received her voter ID card with the wrong name. She, when speaking to Vice News, said, you know, when you're transitioning, it can be a vulnerable time and it takes time and money to change your identity documents. Then again, forces us to reveal secrets we might otherwise not wanted to. Of course, the voter ID cards have the names pretty pretty prominently on it. You know, they've sent out 26 million voter registration cards ahead of the election, and they do admit that there will be, of course, some errors. You know, and this is one of those things where, you know, having trans folks with the ability and the ease to be able to change their identity documents is incredibly important. I mean, you could be rather happily living your life as the way you want it to be lived in the trans experience, and then have Elections Canada, of all people, you know, it provide your birth name, which can be incredibly traumatic for some folks. So it's certainly a huge area of concern, it needs to be done federally. This really does tie back to Bill C-279. Of course, some folks who have been long-time listeners of this show may recall, as we've been discussing this particular bill ad nauseum for rather a while, some folks may recall that C-279 was the Gender Identity and Gender Expression Bill. I believe it was then just whittled down to the Gender Expression Bill. This bill passed the House of Commons with support from the Liberals, the NDP, and members of the Conservative Party. I think there was about, I want to say 14, but I may not be correct on that, who crossed the floor and voted in favour what was seen as a bill to essentially reaffirm and protect trans folks. What the bill would have done is added trans identity to the federal hate crimes legislation, so you can be actually, if you commit a serious crime against somebody who identifies as trans, there can be hate crime sentencing factors applied to that. So this would have been a great win. It would have helped to have a chilling effect on folks who may be considering trans hate crimes. It would have also added the trans identities to the human rights legislation, and would have really opened up a lot of doors. It's important to note that when this is passing its way through the Senate, that what most people see as the real benefit of this legal change, which, by the way, did not happen, I'll get into that in a minute, the real benefit of this legal change is not necessarily that, you know, fantastic, trans rights, it's on the Human Rights Code, excellent, that's great news. The real benefit is how that's then seen and implemented. If you look within Ontario, the Ontario Human Rights Commission has released a very extensive guideline for companies, organizations, and just general folks for how best to be more accessible for people who are trans, and just really some legal guidelines. It's quite a hefty document. And it's that tool which was created which is really important here. And now it's worth noting that, you know, a lot of people go, you know, well, this is 21st century Canada. We're talking 2015 here. You know, we're not rounding up trans people. That's crazy talk. You know, but they do not have the same protections. There are a couple of provinces where they are not protected provincially, although I think now we might be down only to one. And people forget about federally regulated industries. For example, this very station here that I'm currently speaking to you at is regulated by the federal government. And as such, trans folks who would want to work in radio, for example, would not have the same level of legal protections as other folks. However, if they wanted to work in the newspaper industry, then they would be fine. So I think it's important to know that, you know, there has to be an equality before the law, and C-279 really aimed to do that. The reason why I get into this is it has been a bit of a torchlight for the election. I'm considering playing a quick clip where Elizabeth May speaks to why it's such a priority in an interview with Daily Extra. However, before I get into that, the NDP and the Liberals have also stated that they would be in support of bringing back some kind of solution to C-270. Now, Paul Dewar here in Ottawa, who is the NDP's foreign affairs critic, said during the debate in Ottawa that, of course, they would bring it back. It was originally an NDP bill. It was brought forward by NDP MP Randall Garrison, and unfortunately it died in the Senate. But the NDP is certainly behind it. The Green Party, as I'll mention in a second with Elizabeth May, also very much behind it. And then we also have here in Ottawa, referring to the same debate that happened with McKenna, who said that, you know, and then it's they also seem to be in support of bringing that bill back in one concept or another. And for folks who may not be familiar, the bill underwent a series of changes as it was passing through in order to be able to gain the support of Conservative members of the last Parliament in order to make sure it did pass the House of Commons, which it did, which is fantastic news. And fortunately, it was stalled and then died on the order paper after over 2 years of sitting at the back of a drawer in the Senate. So it's important that we don't allow with the next Parliament, we don't allow for it to be stalled quite as long. I think it was stalled more in the Senate than the bill had actually been alive at the House of Commons. So it's definitely a travesty that I unfortunately don't have. The information on the Conservative position on Bill C-279, as we are aware, some members of the Conservative Party had previously supported C-279, the bill for transgender rights. However, it's not immediately evident to myself, and I've not been able to locate queer media with reference to it. But it's important to note that what we do have is that in the 41st Parliament, Stephen Harper himself actually voted against C-279. Elizabeth May voted in favour, Tom McLaren voted in favour. Unfortunately, Justin Trudeau wasn't there, so we don't have his voting record for that, which is, you know, obviously a bit unfortunate, but of course we can only work with what we've got. So, C-279, very important. Anyway, this is Elizabeth May talking about why she finds it so important. This is an interview from the Daily Extra, which we'll just get to in a second. Apparently, here we go. Yes, here we go. 7-9
died in the Senate. Is the Green Party committed to reintroducing that bill, specifically with the without the exemptions that were introduced?
I don't think there's any doubt at all that that bill will pass into law very soon in the new parliament. I can't see any chance that the incoming members of parliament, we will be a majority combined of NDP, Liberal and Greens. And we all supported that bill in its first passage through the House of Commons. The difficulty is in the Senate, and I think this time around we'll be able to make sure that there is support within the Senate for what the House of Commons has passed.
Now, of course, this does speak very specifically to the fact that it was also supported by members of the Conservative Party. Unfortunately, we don't have access to recordings of the other leaders discussing this, but we will try and find it. And if you are aware of footage of the other leaders discussing this specific topic, please let me know. Now, the interesting thing that's come up recently is that Pride Winnipeg, Winnipeg Racing, of course, in Manitoba, Pride Winnipeg is one of the largest Pride festivals in Canada. It is comparable, if not bigger, than Ottawa Pride, which recently saw 110,000 people show up, although I do believe the 2015 festival was slightly larger. What they have done is launched an online campaign trying to encourage members of the GLBT community to go out, all caps, to vote. So it's hashtag out to vote 2015, which, you know, is pretty interesting. They know a couple of interesting polls here. According to the National Post, 74% of non-identifying LGBT people say they know somebody who is. 5% identify as LGBTQ in Manitoba and Saskatchewan. And 10% of those are aged between 18 and 32. You may be interested to know that next week we are interviewing Simon LeVay, talking about how people are actually homosexual. And he, as a neuroscientist, has some interesting analysis of the actual numbers of percentage of the community that really makes up the LGBT community. So, yes, it's important to have that in mind. So they have on their website called, it's obviously at pridewinnipeg.com, and it's easy to find. You know, and it's, we're looking at, they seem to have broken down the voting records of various bills that relate to homosexuality. For example, C-150, which was in 68-69, decriminalizing homosexuality. That also had conservative support, as well as the Liberals and the NDP at the time. And then we got the Marriage Equality Bill, which came out in 2005, Bill C-38, which had support from the Bloc, some of the Conservatives, the Liberals and the NDP. And then when it comes to C-279, you know, the Bloc voted entirely in favour. 12% of the Conservatives voted in favour, 100% of the Greens, 100% of the Independent, and 100% of the Liberals, and 100% of the NDP. And, you know, if you are living in a riding that may become conservative or is predominantly conservative, and, you know, trans rights is an issue that that affects you, then certainly contact your local MP if and when they are elected. And make those opinions heard. It's important, and we've seen great progression of LGBT rights. So yes, check it out, especially if you're listening to this show in Winnipeg, which might happen. But yes, Winnipeg Pride has encouraged people to vote. Now it's worth mentioning that charities and not-for-profit organizations, in particularly charities, cannot actually lobby any one group or a political platform over another as part of a charitable act. So Pride Winnipeg is insisting they simply compiled the records and made them available. So yeah, check it out. It'll be very interesting. Anyways, we have only just scratched the top of this conversation. And I know you're all super excited for me to keep discussing this, but we're going to take a little bit of a break. And we're going to be playing a local band, The Fevers, which are actually one of my favourite bands. And this is their song, Dance Cry Dance. Actually, a little earlier, we heard a second song from Diamond Rings. think it's Everything Sings. It was anyway. We'll be back in just a few minutes on the Velvet Studio.
I'm on a roll.
I wanna dance.
Hello and welcome back to the Velvet Studio, Ottawa's Queer Media, where coming at you from the capital. Now, as we were mentioning earlier, today's discussion is almost entirely about the election. Why is the election important to the GLBT community? And there are certainly a lot of things to be said about that. Now, before we talk about some great LGBT candidates, I am going to take a couple of seconds just to talk about some candidates who maybe were in the running and are actually perhaps not all that great. The one that's been currently dominating the headlines over the last day or two has been the Conservative candidate. Let me just grab his name here. Jagdish Grewal, who was the candidate for the Mississauga-Malton area, actually, truth be told, still is, and is still using Conservative signs, despite the Conservative Party saying that, and we quote here directly, "These comments do not reflect the views of the Conservative Party of Canada. We believe that all Canadians, regardless of race, religion, gender, or sexual orientation, deserve to be treated with respect and dignity." That is a statement that they released, going on to say that Mr. Grewal is no longer an official candidate for the Conservative Party. Unfortunately for the Conservative Party, however, it is too late to have Mr. Grewal's name removed from the voting ballots. He will still be there. Mr. Grewal wrote a editorial in the Punjabi Post early in the year, which he claims has been mistranslated. Whether or not that's true, we'd obviously have to bring in a number of people who are able to translate Punjabi, but it appears that within this, he wrote that psychologists in some cases blame a shock during childhood for causing a person to become gay, and that this particular incident can be corrected. This was in response to the provincial bill to block support of conversion therapies, as there has been significant backlash. The long-lasting damage, psychological damage that conservative therapies have done to folks is well documented, and is a major point of contention within the LGBT community. This perspective, is very... He referred to the Alliance for Therapeutic Choice and Scientific Integrity, which sounds great, but just to give you an idea of kind of where they're coming from, this was in the Globe and Mail, and they offer therapies for unwanted homosexual attractions, and their documentaries covering the damage that this does to people psychologically are a dime a dozen, and can be rather harrowing. So if you do want to look into this, please do so with some discretion. This, of course, is not really a therapy that is exercised here in Canada, thankfully, and in particular, is not being exercised in Ontario. So this was a recent comment made, of course, of the bill that came out earlier in the year, but he no longer is a part of the party. He may still be elected, in which case the decision of whether or not he would like to stand as an independent or to resign would, of course, be a decision entirely up to himself. Of course, that's assuming that he becomes elected, given that his position on this has been made public. But he's not the only one to be caught with public opinions that go contrary to a welcoming environment, to say the least, for LGBT people. There was an NDP, actually a couple of NDP examples, of the NDP candidate Harbhajit Singh Kaloon told a TV program in 2005. In particular, he was speaking to his position on gay marriage, and in terms of homosexuality, and you know, his positions has apologized, apparently, is what people are saying, and Tom Mulcair accepted that apology. This is his decision that he made. We're talking 7 years ago now. Wait, no, 2005. Nine, no, 10 years ago. Gosh, my math is terrible. 10 years is a long time, and I do believe that some people can have a change of heart. Perhaps they get a closer or better understanding of a topic. Actually, that's a good question to folks. You know, where does your position on gay marriage or equal rights for trans folks, where does that sit today compared to what you thought about in 2005? Has your opinion changed over the last 5 years? Be sure to let us know, and kind of let us know why. What happened over the last, 10 years? You know, decade is a long time. What's happened to kind of really change your thinking on that? Or is your position the same? And it'll be an interesting conversation to have. If you recall, last week we were discussing with Annie about the positions in Saudi Arabia, position of Saudi Arabia against LGBT rights. And what was interesting was that the Supreme Court of Canada, Supreme Court of the US, decision has had a very substantial impact. So did that have an impact on your positions on these issues? And more importantly, has your position changed? More pro or perhaps more against LGBT rights? You let us know. Tune in and let us know. Or send a tweet at Velvet Studio One. We are paying close attention to our Twitter feed to see what kind of happens out of there. There is, of course, another NDP candidate, Reverend K.M. Shanti Kumar, who has very strong positions around abortion and same-sex marriage, however, will vote along the NDP lines on those issues. So that's an interesting one. You know, are you voting for somebody to vote along the lines of the political party, or on a vote of conscience? This came up recently in Australia and in the UK, where votes of conscience is where they aren't enforced whips, meaning that each individual MP can vote as their heart dictates or as they wish to represent their writings on moral questions where the party they belong to would not enforce a solid line. So this has come up most frequently globally in relation to the gay marriage debate or decriminalization of consenting homosexual sex. It's an interesting one. I think that this particular, the Scarborough Rouge Park candidate, gives a very good example of, you know, do people with these views, are you voting for the person with that view, or are you voting for the political party, and what difference does that make? Which kind of brings me quite nicely to openly gay political candidates. So Rob Solano of Daily Extra has written a fantastic piece. It's titled, "With a Record Number of LGBT Candidates Running, What Can We Expect of a Queer Politicians?" It's worth checking out. It was published just at the very end of September, so it's not entirely out of date. Last year, in the last parliamentary session, there were 5 openly gay federal MPs, which is 1 down from the parliament before it, which of course had, well, it would have been 6 then. However, we are looking at around 21, I believe, candidates this year, which is fantastic news, of course, that we're seeing a great increase in the number of people who 21 openly LGBT candidates, who feel that they can come forward and being gay is not a hindrance. In some markets like Vancouver, Toronto, Edmonton, Montreal, you know, that makes sense. These are large urban areas. But we're also seeing places like Red Deer, Regina, Saskatoon, St. John's, or even rural ridings in BC, Quebec, Newfoundland, and Nova Scotia. Actually, in Nova Scotia and Newfoundland, we'll be seeing the first openly trans ballot, which is a trans person on the ballot, which is an incredibly exciting time to be living in, where Canada is such a welcoming place, that people are able to become leaders within our society without condition on their sexuality, which is a great great position to be in, and I think that really speaks to Rob's point here about why is it important to have openly gay LGBT MPs. I mean, for the most part, these people just vote as the party votes, as in fact most MPs do, you know, and if not, they're voting on really local stuff like fishing or, you know, things that relate to their specific riding. Because after all, there is no like riding of just homosexuals. I know a few with a lot of them in it, but that's not the point. So people, these MPs, oh, there's 21 of them, are being elected to represent the community rather broadly. So can we expect them to represent the LGBT community as well? We know that historically, over the last few parliaments, these candidates have been very reluctant to be the flag-waving flag bearers of the LGBT community and have, generally speaking, voted on other stuff. But that's not to say they haven't. Philip Toon voted for the striking criminal records of the old sodomy laws. And then we have Danny Morin, who also was with the bill around cyberbullying. And, of course, there's another one about ending the blood ban and civil marriages. I think Randall Garrison was important in that one. So we do see quite a bit of leadership, and Toronto Danforth, Craig Scott with, I believe, C279. But that's... Actually, no, it was Randall Garrison. It was one or the other. I forget which one, but it'll come to me. But what he notes in this article, which I think is particularly interesting, is that the people who are taking, in some cases, the strongest steps for equal LGBT rights in Canada is also straight allies. In particular, he points to Vancouver Centre MP Hedy Fry, which, given Vancouver Centre, is hardly surprising. Their LGBT community there is very, very prominent and well-organized and certainly active in pushing for support there. And I believe that she had bills regarding trans rights and on cyberbullying, as well as advocating for sex workers. So these are all issues that very much pertain to the LGBT community. So what do you think? Do you think it's important that we have out LGBT candidates? For example, is it important to have candidates with your religion that you have on in Parliament? One of the arguments is that when the other MPs are discussing whether or not to, let's use C279, for example, when there is a conversation on whether or not to pass a bill supporting trans rights, having a trans MP to be able to, you know, it's a lot of this has to do with knowing somebody. Having somebody they can identify with, although that in turn is tokenistic, but having someone there to kind of fight that corner may be very beneficial. But then, like I said, it could be tokenistic. It's definitely a difficult question, and one that each and every one of these 21 openly gay, lesbian, bi, trans candidates will have to kind of really discuss, and hopefully we'll see an increase in representation this year, at least up from the 5, which of course, as I mentioned, was a drop in the previous year, but we'll see how that goes. Now, before we hit the end of the show, there is a lot of areas where this is of importance. For example, HIV criminalization is an area where it overtly affects the LGBT community. Access to the arts, LGBT homelessness. Of course, if you're homeless, you're disproportionately a member of the gay, bi, lesbian, or trans community. Quite substantially disproportionate. We're also looking at C-279 and what happens next with a new government. Who comes in next, and what do they say on that? So, yeah, there's a lot of issue areas of major concern to LGBT folks. But also, of course, there's normal, just everyday people areas of concern. As we mentioned in a previous episode, Ottawa has 15% of adoption cases in Ottawa are to same-sex couples. So these are people settling down with families. And, you know, so it's not to pigeonhole the LGBT community as voting only to LGBT issues, because, of course, you know, they're families, they're, you know, hardworking folks, just like everybody else. But there are certain contexts where it might be a different game. One area where there is a LGBT lens which can be applied is to what has been a big hot topic in this election, is the refugee crisis. As we've done in a previous episode, when we interviewed Maurice Tomlinson, we talked about some of what's causing that. And we've seen 20 civil society organizations, such as the AIDS Committee of Ottawa, the AIDS Committee of Toronto, the Canadian Centre for Gender and Sexually Diverse Communities, the Canadian Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce, Gay and Lesbian, like a lot of people have come together to form what they are calling the Dignity Initiative, which was born out of the World Pride events that happened in Toronto, and it really is to promote Canada's international reputation and actionable items in terms of their global responsibility. What's interesting by their call, they released a call, and it's worth looking at. They have 22 recommendations, I think, yes, 22 recommendations, which range from, like, 21 is broaden private sponsorship programs to include countries with high levels of LGBTI persecution. That's a great initiative. And then there's other ones, such as, actually these are really rather lengthy, so I won't read them all out. Reduce wait times for private sponsorship applications so that the applicants can arrive in less than 1 year. So it's really about, you know, applying, you know, more supports to refugees, using diplomatic pressure to kind of promote LGBT rights in countries where that may not be at the top of their list, enhance funding to organizations who are doing work on that, and, you know, reaching out to activists and human rights organizers. We know that the NDP have pretty much wholeheartedly jumped on board with this, as have, there's been, of course, some support from the Liberals and the Greens as well. Unfortunately, when this was released, the Conservative Party didn't send somebody to that particular debate and was not available for comment, which is where this information is coming from. So we don't know the Conservative Party position on this. However, this is really speaking to increased support for refugees and the like. So the Dignity Initiative, be sure to check it out. It should be a very interesting angle on the refugee crisis as we know it. Do you find that we have, this has been a very much a colossal run through of issues as they pertain to the LGBT community in this election? If you feel that we've missed anything or would like to have a different perspective heard, you let us know. You contact us at Velvet Studio One over Twitter or here at the station, and we'll be sure to speak to it in our next episode where there is available. Coming up to play us out, of course, we've got David Ellen last on the other side of the hour. Coming up, we have Kaiser Stronger, which is from the soundtrack to Finding Neverland. It's actually one of my favorite songs, and it's of course a little bit Canadian, so of course that needed to happen today, because every day is CanCon Day, if you ask me. Anyways, thank you so much, and we'll be back just after this. I'm on my own, and the road ahead, I must walk.